The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, RTP at a crossroads. Research Triangle Park stakeholders keep pushing to convert the sprawling landmass into a reimagined, interconnected campus. Will it work? And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, RTP looks to evolve as competition stiffens. Live, work, play becomes a reality in Research Triangle Park, but this new model arrives as RTP faces a fresh wave of challenges. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. RTI International's history is synonymous with Research Triangle Park as the anchor tenant when the park was established in 1959. But Tim Gable, CEO of RTI, said the rise of RTP 3.0, turning the park into a mixed-use development in addition to the existing offices, is just what the park needs to stay relevant and retain talent. We've seen our employee base expand even beyond the triangle. The flexibility it's going to give organizations like ours to think about how most strategically to use our facilities and our campuses is a very good thing, Gable said. The company has seen the park go from a dozen office buildings separated by acres of trees to adding international giants such as IBM in 1965 and GlaxoSmithKline in 1983. In the 1980s, places like the Lunch Spot, the Deli Box, and Ray's Elbow Room Bar popped up as the first social gathering places. Next came the more recent additions of the Boxyard, Hub, RTP, and Horseshoe at the Hub. But Gable believes much more is needed, which is why he supports the ambitious plan called RTP 3.0. The goal is to provide more amenities, to draw employees back to the office, and help RTI International rethink how to best utilize its 180 acres. The campus construct that was envisioned at the creation of the park necessitated these big separations in this bucolic setting, Gable said. But what it didn't do is bring people together for innovation and for starting new companies and so forth. Those kind of intersections that if you only do it from within the walls of your own company, that's going to be one thing. If you compare what drove the Silicon Valley growth and the Austin, Texas growth, a lot of it has to do with people from different companies. In many ways, the park has pushed a live-work-play concept for decades, but what's changed, Research Triangle Foundation CEO Scott Levitan said, is the park still faces challenges beyond the tech hub such as Boston and Silicon Valley. Now, the challenge also comes from growing mixed-use destinations like North Hills and Fenton. Parexel, for example, is moving from Durham to North Hills, and a heavy dose of life sciences companies are now in Holly Springs. The overarching principle that is important, that RTP remain relevant and competitive in our set of competent parks and innovation districts around the world, Levitan said. The competitive set is broad, but some of the themes that we do notice when we look at all of our competitive set is they are not exclusively corporate campuses. Over time, they have evolved and include services, recreational activities, opportunities for housing in markets that traffic is tough. Future vision. RTP 2.0 was Hub RTP, a downtown of sorts that currently has office space, apartments, restaurants, and outdoor amenities, and will eventually have more offices, apartments, retail, and a hotel. Levitan said RTP 3.0 has been a long time coming. It started in 2021 as a survey sent to all landowners and companies within the park to find out what they needed. For RTF, it was a chance to learn how to remain competitive and retain companies. The majority of surveys told Levitan and his team that most of the office buildings were old or outdated and weren't keeping up with the changing workforce needs. The employers sought a diverse, attractive park to attract and retain diverse talent. One of those companies with outdated buildings was IBM, and in 2025, IBM moved most employees out of its aging RTP campus, keeping only a small number there, and into its complex right outside of RTP. Durham County Board of Commissioners Chair Mike Lee said IBM was one of the companies that wrote a letter to the commissioners in support of passing the zoning amendment to allow for RTP 3.0. The survey responses helped identify a need for landowners to redevelop underutilized property and or parking lots into something more, but to allow for residences, retail, services, restaurants, and hotels inside the park's bounds. Several hurdles needed to be overcome on the public and private sides. In January 2025, the RTP Owners and Tenants Association voted 96% to revise the park's land covenants. Then Wake County in June and Durham County in November unanimously voted to approve amending RTP zoning district. Those zoning amendments took effect on January 1. Now, the RTF Board and the Owners and Tenants Association have to create new land covenants, adopt enhanced development standards, and approve revised design guidelines. In addition, a planning board and a design review board must be formed. Levitan anticipates those steps to be complete by the summer, which opens the door for RTP to be turned into more than a tech and innovation hub. Innovation is part of why RTI voted yes to change the land covenants and why it sees the new plan as a rising tide for everybody, according to Gable. The flexibility it's going to give organizations like ours to think about how most strategically to use our facilities and our campuses is a very good thing, he said. The ability to innovate more easily would help RTP stay competitive with other tech hubs and with mixed-use hubs in the Triangle, which is key to retaining companies. This shift comes at a time when more tech and life sciences companies, especially pharmaceutical firms, have started choosing locations outside of the park. For example, Amgen, Fujifilm, Diosynth, and CSL Seqirus chose to build and expand facilities in Holly Springs, a growing hotspot for pharma companies. Those campuses are positioned right near Oakview Commons, which has restaurants, shops, and hotels. Offering several different types of amenities within the park would help companies provide incentives to bring employees back to the office, RTP leaders believe. Office buildings that are either highly amenitized or have several amenities surrounding them are where tenants are flocking. Offices in North Hills, Fenton, and Raleigh Ironworks are winning the day when it comes to leasing. RTF is hoping to replicate similar scenarios so that companies will remain in RTP and new companies will arrive. Roadblocks ahead. Despite the initial hurdles clearing smoothly, making RTP 3.0 a cohesive reality comes with several roadblocks. Adding restaurants, retail, and moving people into the park to live requires infrastructure to support it. And currently, the park doesn't have the needed infrastructure to support the increase of uses. The most pressing issues to address are transportation and water and sewer lines. With the addition of what we're talking about residential and in retail and corporate itself, an expansion like that is obviously going to increase levels of transit, or it's going to be driving our infrastructure as far as the roads are concerned, water, sewage, all those sorts of things is going to put a drag on that, Lee said. So we're going to have to invest in that, especially in the transportation and transit areas. When it comes to transportation, Levitan said there are several plans in motion by Raleigh and Durham, Wake County, Durham County, and the North Carolina Department of Transportation that would help. It seems likely one of the models of transportation will be bus rapid transit extended along Highway 54. Building a transportation network for RTP that would work could likely cost hundreds of millions of dollars, per Joe Malazzo, executive director of Regional Transportation Alliance. While that cost seems high, it's one that Malazzo believes is important for the municipalities to invest in because otherwise traffic will just get worse. NCDOT is exploring adding an Amtrak station to RTP, which would coincide with the Triangle Mobility Hub that will sit by the rail corridor off Highway 54 between Davis Drive and Miami Boulevard. The $50 million project is a partnership between RTF and GO Triangle, where $25 million will come from a federal grant and $25 million from local transportation tax. The Mobility Hub would replace GO Triangle's current transit center and become the anchor for regional connectivity. The hub will provide bus service along with drop-off spaces for rideshare services. It's not about getting everybody out of their cars necessarily. It's about creating opportunities for people to get out of their cars if they want. It's also about creating more flexible mixes of uses so people never get in their cars to begin with to travel to RTP because they're already there, Malazzo said. Some people will live there and others may not live there, but they're not going to leave the park during the day or the beginning of the day because those new retail uses and other commercial uses will be there in close proximity, kind of like what happens in the North Hills and in the Fentons of the world, he said. We need more of those in a multinodal or polycentric nodes of opportunity, nodes of accessibility, that's what's going to have to happen there. While plans are already underway for transportation, extending and adding water and sewer lines is a little further behind. Lee said Durham County is adding a pump station where Interstate 540 meets Highway 55 in anticipation of the increased uses in RTP. When it comes to adding water and sewer lines, the counties are responsible for handling that. Since most of RTP is in Durham County, the county is working on plans to address those needs. Another concern that Durham County has is providing education for families that would be moving into the park. Lee said that an elementary school would need to be built in RTP to serve the children who would live there. Since people would be living in the park, Gable said a concern would be providing amenities for people outside of work. Could we imagine someday a YMCA of the Triangle? It's kind of like what's going to create almost the equivalent of a downtown close by where some of the folks that might have more interest in an urban lifestyle, Gable said. While the idea to transform RTP into a 15-minute city sounds great, the reality of making it happen is a different story. Not only does the park face infrastructure challenges, but it faces layout challenges. With how big and spread out the park is, and given how many companies have buildings behind the Vale of Pines, it's difficult to imagine how it can become one cohesive destination center that flows smoothly. How does this look? How much of it will be redevelopment, so raising buildings? How much would be just developing because there's so much open space in these campuses? Then there'll be situations where it makes sense for UNC and XYZ to be neighbors, to do it together because it's just kind of some weird parcels that are meandering driveways, said Chester Allen, executive vice president of CBRE's Land Services Group. As a land advisor who sold hundreds of sites within 5 or 10 miles from there, I'm like, okay, how does this happen? How do they decide what to do? Will it happen? Despite the ability for landowners to soon be able to apply for developmental changes to their properties, the question remains if anyone will. Yes, the new zoning and rules will allow for mixed uses, but no one is forced to do anything with their property. So what happens if property owners don't make any moves for years? Or what happens if only a handful choose to redevelop, but those redevelopments are on opposite ends of the park? As Allen said, the park was 100% designed to be isolated, not integrated at all, even the infrastructure of the roads. What if this one campus doesn't do anything but then others do? Just choppy. New development would be at least 5 years out, given how long it takes to work through development plans, approvals, and get things built. While Lee is confident the needed infrastructure like transportation, water, and sewer will be in place by the time any new uses are built, such as housing and retail, making things cohesive will prove more difficult. The spread of office campuses and lack of companies having to do anything at all if they don't want to make the future of RTP 3.0 a big question mark. While there's a vision to see the park turn into a destination center with a variety of uses that attract companies from all over the world, without a designated development plan that will be followed through, it's hard to say if that vision will come true. We do hope that folks rethink the campuses that don't work for them, but nothing under 3.0 would ever force an existing user to change their campus. We don't have the authority to do that, Levitan said. We want people, if they like their existing environment, to keep investing in that and to keep doing what they do. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Carolina North is bold move for UNC. Like its neighborhoods, UNC will add a second and distinct campus. UNC Chapel Hill is planning its largest expansion since its founding, an ambitious goal that aligns with similar projects at its neighboring rivals. Carolina, in a plan announced January 21 by Chancellor Lee Roberts, will develop the 230-acre Carolina North, the former Horace Williams Airport located a mile and a half from campus. The effort, beginning in 2027, will create dual campuses for Carolina, echoing similar situations at Duke University and NC State University. Duke's original East Campus, largely home to freshmen, is overshadowed by West Campus but remains an essential part of the Duke experience. NC State's sprawling Centennial Campus, dating to the 1980s, is a vibrant hub of research and features the James B. Hunt Jr. Library. Robert sees Carolina North emerging as a similar extension of the school. You want a place that has its own distinct sense of place and its own feel, while at the same time feeling familiar to people who understand and appreciate our existing campus, he said. Among the priorities for Carolina North are healthcare, AI, and advanced technology. And like Centennial Campus, pairing with the private sector is a priority. For example, Robert said residence halls there could be built quickly and effectively by the private sector with the use of ground leases. In particular, UNC plans to follow an emerging trend in academia called a contemporary commons, where classes and offices are more integrated into open and welcoming spaces and become less single-purpose. The University of Virginia, for example, recently opened such a building on its campus. The newer projects are being built with the idea that you can have a holistic live, work, play, research, study environment with the full range of uses, Robert said. That creates a sense of place that is attractive to people. And, of course, it's attractive to investment as the university embarks on a dramatic expansion in Chapel Hill. 5 Points spot turns over again as Max closes. A spot in Raleigh's 5 Points is turning over again. Max Speed Shop, a Charlotte chain, has shut down at 1626 Glenwood Avenue. Max Speed Shop had taken over Lone Rider Brewing's lease after the tap room closed in 2023. The space was home to the Point restaurant before that. Max Speed Shop opened at a time of revitalization for 5 Points. Businesses like the Rialto Theater, Uncle Jesse's Honky Tonk and Saloon, and The Loop. The 4,500-square-foot building's landlord is Five Winds LLC, whose registered agent is Cecilia Covington Winslow. Elon looks at how to integrate Queens campus. Elon University made a bold move last year when it essentially acquired Queens University in Charlotte. It's a huge opportunity for Elon, which gains a beautiful campus in Myers Park. Elon already offers a part-time law degree in Charlotte and plans to expand to a full-time program. Elon has brought back Jeff Stein as chief integration officer. Stein rose to chief of staff at Elon but left in 2023 to be president of Mary Baldwin University, the Triad Business Journal reported. He resigned the position in August. Carey firm lands a winner with IU quarterback. Carey's Epic Games was a winner January 19 when Indiana University claimed a national title. Epic Games, the company behind the video game Fortnite, is an NIL partner with Hoosiers quarterback Fernando Mendoza. Epic Games took a chance on Mendoza through a name, image, and likeness deal last year. Bill Carter, founder of Student Athlete Insights, said Epic made a great bet. You can pick a lot of athletes, and even if some of them turn out to work out for you, rarely is it going to work out this good, he said. Last month, Mendoza announced on Instagram that he would be partnering with Epic Games alongside Omar Cooper Jr., a wide receiver with Indiana. The post showed Mendoza and Cooper playing Fortnite on the massive television screens at Hard Rock Stadium near Miami. Essentially, Sports estimates the Epic Games deal is worth at least $50,000. And finally, Raleigh Group buys Atlanta restaurants. A Raleigh investment firm continues to bolster its roster of culinary hotspots. Jeff Brock, founder and managing partner at Hargett Hunter, said the firm raised the funds for the acquisition of Big Table Restaurants, a 20-year-old restaurant group based in Atlanta with tavern and steakhouse concepts. He said the husband and wife owners are still involved in the company. We can easily double the business without ever having to even leave that home base. That's the kind of calculus that works really well for us. Continue to support the home market, build infrastructure, build capability, and then ultimately find the right next market to take, Brock said. At least for now, Brock has no intention to expand the Atlanta restaurants to the Raleigh area. And now we turn to the top news items in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Zach Ezone. Genentech surges investment to $2 billion. Holly Springs continues to add jobs investment as hub for biotech firms. A global biotechnology company is scaling its investment in Holly Springs, which is emerging as a life sciences hub. Genentech, a subsidiary of Swiss healthcare company Roche Holdings AG, plans to invest $2 billion to expand its manufacturing operation in Holly Springs. It's the latest major biotechnology investment in the fast-growing community. The company, based in San Francisco, last year announced plans to invest $700 million in developing its first East Coast manufacturing facility. This initial investment was expected to create 420 jobs with an average minimum wage of nearly $120,000. As part of that initial investment, Genentech was approved for state and local incentives. Genentech on January 20 announced it was more than doubling its initial investment in Holly Springs, where it broke ground in August. The company expects to add another 100 jobs to its Holly Springs operations with this new investment. The facility is projected to be operational in 2029. This expansion reflects our long-term commitment to the United States and communities like Holly Springs that offer the kind of world-class biotech talent, top research institutions, and strong infrastructure that make innovation possible, CEO Ashley Magarji said. Genentech's initial facility design included shell space that it could later build out with additional production lines. Now it is fully building those lines through this additional investment, said Paul Bezzi, who leads Roche's high-volume technical operations portfolio. We had within the original design some shell space, some room to grow the number of production lines, Bezzi said, and that's what we're doing. Genentech is developing its facility at the Camp Helix campus in Holly Springs, where Amgen is also developing facilities to boost medicine production. South of the campus, Fujifilm Biotechnologies is investing $3.2 billion in a manufacturing facility. And our next article is written by Kaylee Thompson. The headline, North Hills area now primed for new towers. Kane Realty has won its years-long battle to develop taller buildings. Kane Realty Corporation has won its years-long battle to develop taller buildings in North Hills. On January 20, the Raleigh City Council voted 6-2 to approve Kane Realty's rezoning application for 12, 20, and 40 stories across multiple lots on Six Forks and Lassiter Mill Roads, although the rezoning has a condition capping heights at 37 stories. Council members Christina Jones and Jane Harrison opposed the rezoning. The approval comes after Kane refiled the rezoning request last year. In 2023, it withdrew its initial request, filed in 2021, due to community opposition. The zoning approval clears the path for more high-rises to join the city's skyline. The eastern building at 36 stories is the tallest building in North Hills. The Raleigh developer has committed to restricting density levels to the previous zoning of 5 and 12 stories. The maximum square footage for all six parcels is 3 million square feet. It breaks down to up to 2,521 residential units, up to 1.67 million square feet of office and medical space, and up to 263,465 square feet of restaurant and retail space. The refiled request went before the City Council for the first time on January 6, where residents raised concerns. Kane Realty has added a zoning condition where the developer must contribute $40,000 per dwelling unit to the city's affordable housing fund for up to 1% of the approved residential units, meaning a maximum donation of around $1 million. If we say no and they zone by right, we don't get the additional funds for the fire department and affordable housing, said Mayor Pro Tem Stormy Fort. But I will say we understand one of the biggest challenges is transportation in the area, and we've got a lot of work to do. The 37-story buildings would be along Six Forks Road. Developer goes back to townhomes for Sanford project. This is written by Ben Tobin. Townhomes are back on the table for a proposed housing development in Sanford. In plans submitted this month to the Sanford Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee, Site Advice Incorporated is seeking approval for a subdivision on more than 36 acres off Commerce Drive called Regent's Crossing. The most recent iteration of the plan calls for 145 townhomes with a density of 3.99 units per acre. The Raleigh company had submitted a plan for 125 townhomes on the site in May. At the time, John Woodleaf, a principal with Cary Site Advice Incorporated, said, and the applicant for the project, said the price points for the homes would start in the upper 200 thousands of dollars. But in November, Site Advice Incorporated submitted a plan for the subdivision to have 60 single-family detached homes. Now the developer is going back to townhomes. We had initially considered pivoting to single-family lots late last year, Woodleaf wrote in an email. We have since determined that current townhome market conditions notwithstanding, this site is eminently suited for townhomes. Bull City Venture Partners expands. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. One of the region's oldest venture firms has no plans to age into legacy status. It's expanding in headcount, in office footprint, and in ambition. Bull City Ventures Partners of Durham marked its 25th anniversary by doubling its team, a shift for a firm long powered by founders Jason Kaplan and David Jones. For most of its existence, Bull City has been run entirely by its founding duo. That changes with the arrival of Carly Connell and Joseph Doherty as principal and investor. The hire gives the firm fresh muscle as it invests from its fourth fund, with a fifth likely ahead. Aside from the three-year stint of Michael Lee, who departed in 2024 for Live Oak Bank's venture arm, the firm has been a tight two-person shop since its Southern Capital Ventures roots. But with Fund 4 underway and the deal pipeline widening, the founders decided it was time to grow. "We just need more horsepower, more brain power, more people out there meeting with founders," Kaplan said. The firm has also relocated from downtown Durham to a larger office space at Meridian Parkway that includes conference rooms and event space. For Connell, formerly a vice president in Deloitte's emerging growth practice, the transition is seamless, she said. Her sales career made her a super connector. Venture lets her turn that instinct into impact. "It felt like the perfect opportunity to dive deeper into the ecosystem," she said. Doherty is the grandson of InterSouth Partners co-founder Dennis Doherty. He jokes about chasing Kaplan down at startup events twice. For him, venture is a front row seat to tomorrow. "We're some of the first individuals to identify and participate in the next evolution of markets," he said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages. The first one is Kaylee Thompson's page on real estate and development. California firm sells mega campus in RTP. Boston's King Street Properties pays $29.5 million for 104 acres. A site in Research Triangle Park that's primed for millions of square feet of commercial space has been sold for a fraction of its previous price. Alexandria Real Estate Equities of California sold the Alexandria Center for Next Gen Medicines, formerly Genesis at RTP, to King Street Properties of Boston for $29.5 million, according to Durham County deed records. The property is cleared, undeveloped land that has a site plan approved for life sciences buildings. Alexandria Real Estate acquired the site in 2021 for $91 million. Durham County property records don't list an assessed value for the 104-acre property at 3029 East Cornwallis Road along Interstate 885. The sale also includes a 100,000-square-foot building that houses the regional research and development headquarters for DPR Construction. The approved site plan includes 1.055 million square feet spread among three biomanufacturing buildings and four research and development buildings. The LoopNet listing for the property states it could accommodate up to 5 million square feet. The sale comes as the region has a glut of vacant life sciences spaces. A spokesperson said King Street Properties is excited to expand our portfolio in the region. The sale comes after Alexandria Real Estate announced it would sell non-core assets and focus on build-to-suit opportunities that are mega campuses. It owns 3.6 million square feet of space in the Triangle, 3.2 million square feet of which are mega campuses, according to a presentation to investors in December. On its third quarter earnings call, Executive Chairman Joel Marcus said the firm would reduce holdings slated for development. He said the company wanted to rid the balance sheet of property that was not producing income. Alexandria Real Estate has sold multiple buildings recently, including a manufacturing building in Durham for $155 million to Novartis, a fully leased flex building in Morrisville for $25 million, and a medical office building in Durham for $12.1 million. Student housing near NC State sold for $52.7 million. A student housing property serving NC State University has been sold as the university's enrollment continues to climb. 1301 Hillsborough Street LLC bought the Live on Hillsborough property for $52.7 million, according to Wake County deed records. The seller was TPG Angelo Gordon and Horizon Realty Advisors, which acquired the properties in 2021 for $56.5 million. The 1301 Hillsborough LLC is addressed to three individuals in Zionsville, Indiana. According to North Carolina Secretary of State records, the group, which appears to include executives at Delaware Life Insurance Company, did not respond to inquiries. Live on Hillsborough is a collection of six buildings totaling 376 beds and 203 units. Four of the buildings with 274 beds are on the south side of Hillsborough Street near Pullen Park. The other two buildings, which have 102 beds, are further west on Hillsborough Street near Zaxby's. When sold, the student housing properties were 93% occupied, according to brokerage firm JLL. Teddy Leatherman, Scott Clifton, Kevin Caslow, and Alex Nordlinger of JLL's Capital Markets, Investment Sales, and Advisory Team represented the sellers in the transaction. And finally, in Orange County, French manufacturer buys former still facility. A French manufacturer acquired a Hillsborough building as it gets ready to relocate its U.S. headquarters from Florida to the Triangle. Citel America Incorporated, and that's spelled C-I-T-E-L, paid $7.93 million for the industrial building that Steele owned and once occupied in Hillsborough, according to Orange County deed records. Steele relocated to its new, larger facility in Mebane in early 2024. Orange County has seen an increase in industrial space between Steele, and I should mention that's spelled S-T-I-H-L, building out its new facility, Hi-Chu building a second manufacturing facility in Mebane, and Griffin Partners is building industrial space just outside Mebane. Citel has had its eye on the 82,900-square-foot building since February 2025 when it first visited the region, and the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina took the team to different sites. North Carolina has always been considered the perfect place in between Florida and New York. I reached out to the EDPNC, Vice President Patrick Coyle said. The one up in Hillsborough, which for us, we were looking for something smaller, but it's just a nice building. The owners before, still, are a great company. It was in great shape. We wanted to be close to the RTP, but didn't necessarily have to be anywhere specifically. The schools here, the workforce, seems great. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle page, written by Ben Tobin. Pine Wild kicks off $18 million expansion. 2 years after being sold, a Pinehurst Country Club is getting an upgrade. A Pinehurst Country Club has kicked off an $18 million project to expand its clubhouse and other amenities. Pine Wild Country Club has started construction on the transformation. This comes a little more than 2 years after it was sold for about $20 million to an entity connected to seasoned club manager Chris Card. Card said in a statement that, "We are building a club experience worthy of what our members expect in the home of American golf. This clubhouse will serve as the social and cultural center of Pine Wild and a defining investment in the future of this community," he said. According to Card, the expanded clubhouse will include a signature restaurant, private dining spaces, a 150-seat ballroom, expanded locker rooms and fitness facilities, golf and tennis shops, and a back patio with fire pits. Massachusetts-based S3 Design is the architect for the project, which is expected to span approximately 26,000 square feet. Construction is expected to be completed at the start of 2027. Pine Wild sits just west of Pinehurst Resort. The club is surrounded by a gated residential community covering around 2,000 acres. Investments in Pinehurst have been surging in recent years amid the region's fast-growing population fueled by younger families moving to the area, reshaping the region's status as a golf and retirement destination. Pine Wild's first golf course, the 18-hole Magnolia Course, designed by Gene Hamm, came online in 1989. The club has two other courses, the 18-hole Holly Course, designed by golf legend Gary Player, and a 9-hole par 3 course, Azalea, designed by Bill Sessoms. The Pine Wild community was annexed into the village of Pinehurst in 2010. In Smithfield, developer resubmits 1,000-home subdivision. A developer who had a 1,000-home subdivision rejected in a small but growing Johnston County town is taking another shot with a plan that increases the buffer between the development and a nearby hog farm. Rock Tower Partners, a Clayton development firm, has resubmitted a proposal to the town of Smithfield for the annexation of nearly 500 acres at 2917 Wilson's Mills Road. The proposal, for a neighborhood called Bellamy, reduces the total housing units from 1,147 to 1,076. The request comes just months after Smithfield leaders rejected a similar large-scale annexation from Rock Tower Partners. Two of the main issues when the Smithfield Town Council rejected this proposal 5-2 during an October meeting were density and the proximity to an adjacent hog farm. Mathis said his team has reduced the number of townhomes by 86, now at 191 in the new proposal, and increased lot sizes to reduce density. As far as the hog farm concerns, all lots within 500 feet of the existing hog farm lagoon and its associated four structures have been removed, resulting in significant separation and buffering between the existing hog farm and proposed residential units, Mathis said. Numbers detail county's rapid growth. Johnston County's smallest town, appropriately named Micro, grew every year from 2020 through 2024. The one stoplight town has 530 residents, according to the most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau. While a tiny number, it represents close to a 15% growth for the town since 2020. In fact, Micro, which sits off U.S. 301 and Interstate 95 east of Selma, is the third fastest growing municipality in all of Johnston County. It is not alone in having a double-digit growth rate. All 11 municipalities have grown by at least 12% since 2020, according to a Triangle Business Journal analysis of census data. Johnston County is North Carolina's fourth fastest-growing county, with a population of just under 250,000. It grew by roughly 15.7% between 2020 and 2024. Clayton grew by just shy of 19%, with its population now around 32,000. The town has seen its population double since 2010. Four Oaks, a town of roughly 2,700 residents, saw the second highest growth rate at roughly 18.5%. On the other end of the spectrum, Kenley, the easternmost municipality in Johnston County, saw the lowest growth rate at around 12.2%. But many people who live in Johnston County leave the county daily to work somewhere else. According to North Carolina Department of Commerce data, roughly four in every five Johnston County residents who work in the private sector work in another county. And finally, we have a big number, $1 million, the amount that a Wake Forest LLC paid for roughly 7.6 acres at 200 South Tech Park Lane on the southeast side of Clayton. And now we turn to the healthcare and life sciences page written by Zach Ezone. Children's Hospital gets $25 million funding boost. Charlotte Bodler makes lead gift to NC Children's in Apex. North Carolina Children's has announced its first major gift to support its ambitious plans to build a multi-billion dollar hospital in Apex. Coca-Cola Consolidated of Charlotte, the nation's largest Coca-Cola bottler, is giving $25 million toward the hospital campus, a joint venture between the Duke and UNC Health Systems. The gift will support NC Children's in establishing a behavioral health center at the medical campus. The investment will support the creation of a welcoming, family-centered facility, as well as programs designed to provide comprehensive care addressing medical needs and the emotional, psychological, and social well-being of children and their families, NC Children's said in a statement announcing the investment January 15. Duke and UNC created NC Children's last year as an independent nonprofit to lead and operate North Carolina's first freestanding children's hospital. The organization has identified a 230-acre property within the Veradia development along US 1 and Highway 540 as the site for the campus. The organization plans to begin construction on the project next year. Plans for the medical campus include a hospital with about 570 beds, including more than 100 behavioral health beds. When it opens, the healthcare campus is expected to create thousands of jobs and have a transformative impact on the region. NC Children's aims to raise more than $1 billion towards the hospital campus. In August, Duke and UNC officials filed paperwork with the NC Secretary of State to create a charitable foundation. The nonprofit will raise funds, provide support, and make grants for NC Children's and other organizations advancing children's health in North Carolina and beyond, according to the filings. NC Children's is also relying on funding from the state to support the project. The General Assembly in 2023 allocated $320 million towards the project. Last year, the state Senate proposed increasing this figure to $850 million. Major North Carolina employer to close in Asheville. A major life sciences employer in North Carolina is closing a large facility in the western part of the state and laying off more than 400 employees. Thermo Fisher Scientific has informed state and local officials of its plans to close a facility in Asheville. The company expects to lay off 421 employees, with terminations beginning by the end of this year and continuing through 2027. A written notice from Thermo Fisher about the layoff says not all employees at the site will be affected, despite the entire facility closing. The types of jobs affected include assemblers, engineers, and technicians. The decision to close is part of the company's efforts to evolve to meet current customer demands, a Thermo Fisher spokesperson said in a statement. There are times when we must evolve our organization to remain in line with current customer demands, the spokesperson said. The company's presence in North Carolina stretches beyond Asheville into the Triangle and the eastern part of the state. As of last year, it had about 7,800 employees across 13 sites in North Carolina. And finally, after parent company sold, layoffs hit Durham. A German pharmaceutical company is cutting jobs in Durham following its multi-billion-dollar acquisition last year of a company with local operations. Merck KGaA, based in Darmstadt, Germany, not related to Merck & Company, has laid off an undisclosed number of employees following its $3.9 billion acquisition of SpringWorks Therapeutics. A spokesperson for EMD Serono, the U.S. healthcare business of Merck KGaA, confirmed the job cuts. Following last year's SpringWorks Therapeutics acquisition and the need to streamline research operations, EMD Serono has made the difficult decision to reduce research headcount at our Durham site, the spokesperson said. We remain committed to supporting impacted employees through this transition. The company did not say how many jobs were cut or how many employees remain in Durham. However, the spokesperson said the office at 9 Laboratory Drive will remain open. SpringWorks had 368 full-time employees, including 140 focused on research and development programs at the end of 2024, according to its last annual filing as a public company. It previously disclosed that various corporate functions were based at its RTP office. The firm is headquartered in Stamford, Connecticut. And now we turn to Kate Tracy's page, Retail and Restaurants. Uniquities, adding warehouse space, owner looks to expand footprint to support push for online sales. As a local boutique owner with 5 stores in North Carolina, Julie Jennings spends a considerable part of her year traveling to Los Angeles, Paris, Tokyo, and other destinations in search of fashionable vendors. Now she's trying on real estate development for size. Jennings, who first opened Uniquities in Chapel Hill in 1992, is planning to build a 13,800-square-foot office and warehouse building at 2900 Gateway Center Boulevard off Interstate 40 in Aviation Parkway. The proposed building would come with 4,800 square feet of office space and 9,000 square feet of warehouse space. Jennings is aiming to complete the project in 2027. Jennings liked the location for its proximity to the Raleigh-Durham International Airport and access to Uniquities stores in the area. It's a great location because we have employees who live everywhere in the Triangle, she said. Jennings said Uniquities has been renting a warehouse since the beginning of the pandemic. Approximately 10% of Uniquities sales come from online purchases right now. In 2026, Jennings is aiming for a 25% year-over-year increase in online sales. The store's current warehouse is nearby, located off Dominion Drive, but it's much smaller at 5,500 square feet. Jennings said Uniquities will have 15 employees work from the new location initially. Uniquities purchased the 1.62-acre site for $715,000 in May 2025, according to property records. Uniquities has boutiques in North Hills and Village District in Raleigh, in addition to one in Chapel Hill on Franklin Street and two in the Charlotte Metro. Its largest and highest volume store is Village District. Uniquities employs about 50 people total. Empire Properties invests again in downtown. A prominent Raleigh landlord has purchased more properties downtown, including the building where troubled Taz's supermarket was located. Greg Haddams, Empire Properties, purchased 201, 205, and 209 South Wilmington Street, as well as 104 East Hargett Street for $2.7 million, according to Wake County records. The real estate firm bought the properties under Quixotic Empire LLC. The transaction includes the home of Taz's supermarket. On January 16, workers said it was the convenience store's last day. In addition, Empire now owns buildings that are home to a tattoo shop called Tattoo Supreme and a barber shop. The sellers were Philip and Ellen Horwitz. Ryan Shields of Noel Investment Real Estate represented the Horowitzes. He said, "This transaction underscores the robust demand we're seeing for well-positioned real estate in downtown Raleigh, where long-term investor confidence continues to drive pricing." Shields said Empire plans to find a new tenant for Taz's space. The total assessed value for the properties is $2.22 million. The sale coincides with the $1.3 million investment awarded recently to the family of Mark T. Garrity Jr., who died after former Taz's owner, Tazir Zarka, stabbed him in 2023, according to media reports. Texas-style barbecue concept targets Durham. The Texas Smokers will soon start running at Durham's American Tobacco campus. East of Texas, a Winston-Salem barbecue restaurant has signed a lease for 5,579 square feet at the American Tobacco campus in the Reed Building with plans to open this summer. We weren't really looking to expand, I'll be honest, owner Claire Calvin said, but we had been open a couple of years and had the opportunity and met the people at American Tobacco, and honestly, it just felt like such an amazing relationship with them, and they were so supportive. Like Winston-Salem, Calvin found Durham's Tobacco Town reinvention appealing. "I couldn't imagine a better opportunity," she said. The restaurant will have seating for 100 inside and about 100 outside. East of Texas began in 2023. Originally from Houston, Calvin has enjoyed bringing the casual Texas atmosphere to Winston-Salem. And finally, Yoga Studio joins Kane Development. A new retailer is stretching into Kane Realty's Rockway Development in Raleigh. Rooted Yoga and Wellness, an independent yoga studio, plans to open at The Row Apartments this summer at 1021 South Saunders Street near Dix Park. TJ Holt, owner of Rooted, said in a release that the growing area near Dix Park is a huge plus as it already attracts the active, wellness-minded folks we hope to serve. Rooted's neighbors at The Row include BK Pilates and Benchwarmers Bagels, which opened in November. The Mexican restaurant Campo Taco Company is opening at The Row soon, while Raleigh institution Sunflowers Cafe will make a comeback this year after closing in 2020. And now we turn to our last reporter page, On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. Canadian manufacturer looks to Wilmington. Producer of high-end glass in Nova Scotia will add coastal presence. A company developing high-end glass for construction projects has chosen Wilmington as its U.S. base of operations, part of a larger manufacturing strategy that could eventually mean a massive campus and hundreds of jobs along the coast. Doug Milburn, the Canadian founder of multiple manufacturing firms, describes Advanced Glazings, the latest of his four companies to establish a Wilmington presence, as making glass you can't see through. The glass is insulated, allowing light to enter without overheating a space. It diffuses sunlight, eliminating the need for blinds. North Carolina projects include NC State University's Doak Field and the Halifax Visitor Center. For now, Advanced Glazings operates as a boutique firm with just over 30 employees at its Nova Scotia headquarters. But Milburn envisions a large Wilmington footprint similar to the success he's had with Protocase, a rapid manufacturing company he founded that also picked Wilmington for its first U.S. expansion. Protocase employs 600 people, including about 65 in Wilmington. Milburn hopes to grow that North Carolina headcount to 500 in the next few years. "We had to expand somewhere," Milburn said. His Nova Scotia base can only grow so much given the limitations of a small town. He had considered North Carolina a decade ago, but delayed Advanced Glazing's expansion to focus on execution. Over time, demand grew, and much of it was coming from the U.S. So Milburn decided to pull the trigger. Initially, the plan is to focus on commercial sales and strengthen existing demand. In the next few years, he hopes to move manufacturing lines to Wilmington, following an expansion playbook he's used with his other companies. He sees major potential for Advanced Glazings in the southeast, pointing to the region's sunny climate and how the translucent glass can help temper brightness. "Our market potential is very large," he said. There are challenges, including tariffs. Aluminum makes up about 2% of the products, meaning that portion falls under U.S. metal tariffs. For now, the impact is minimal, Milburn said. In fact, tariff policy has boosted business in Canada and Europe, even as U.S. demand remains strongest. Not expanding isn't an option if Advanced Glazings wants to grow, and it does. Milburn envisions a large co-located Wilmington campus for all his companies, which include Protocase and its subsidiaries, Protospace Manufacturing and 45 Drives. The search process is underway. That search is focused on Wilmington, not other parts of the state. Milburn wants to replicate the small-town feel of Nova Scotia, something he says wouldn't be possible in the hustle culture of the Triangle. The basis of the company is the human beings who work in it, he said. Place is a part of that. The firm recently hired its first Wilmington employee. Currently, Protocase operates offices at Skyline Center in downtown Wilmington and a production space on US 421. The hunt is on for a much larger campus. Milburn said he's working with economic developers locally and in Raleigh to find the right fit. And our second article, Aquarium Makes Temporary Shift to Mall. A popular North Carolina aquarium is moving to a mall as a major renovation begins. North Carolina Aquarium at Fort Fisher is scheduled to close soon, and tickets now are only being booked through January 31. The updated aquarium will include building the largest shark habitat in North Carolina and will expand the aquarium into the largest in the state. It's the first significant renovation of the museum in 25 years, and it comes on the heels of a major upgrade to the nearby Fort Fisher State Historic Site, where a Union attack overwhelmed a Confederate garrison on January 15, 1865. With the aquarium closing, the state will put a temporary exhibit at Independence Mall. Construction on that began January 12 and is likely to be completed in March. The 8,000-square-foot temporary aquarium, which will include ambassador animal encounters, marine life habitats, environmental education, and a gift shop, will be located in the mall's J.C. Penney wing. And finally, a big number, $37,229. That's how much the North Carolina Seafood Festival gave to 11 local charities for 2025, according to its Facebook page. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column, this one written by Zach Ezone, and it focuses on Anshul Thakral. That's A-N-S-H-U-L, Thakral, T-H-A-K-R-A-L. In a closer look, title, CEO of Fortrea, age 48, hometown, Armonk, New York, first job, American Associates, a management consulting firm in NYC, education, Bachelor of Science and Master of Science in Engineering and Biomedical Engineering, Johns Hopkins University, MBA, University of Pennsylvania. Number of employees, 14,500. Anshul Thakral has spent much of the past decade operating at the highest levels of North Carolina's clinical research industry. Thakral in 2016 joined Wilmington-based PPD and served in various levels of senior positions. This includes building up PPD's biotech business and later serving as the company's chief commercial officer prior to Thermo Fisher Scientific acquiring PPD in late 2021. After leaving PPD, he served as co-founder and CEO of Launch Therapeutics, a drug development engine supported by the global investor, Carlyle. But he left Launch in 2025 to become CEO of Fortrea and rejoin an industry he loves. Fortrea formed in 2023 when Burlington's LabCorp spun off its clinical development business, but its history goes back to the company previously operating as Covance before LabCorp acquired it in 2015. Unwinding from LabCorp was difficult. Fortrea's stock price has dropped more than 40% since hitting the public markets, reaching a low of around $4 a share in May. The next month, Fortrea named Thakral as its new CEO, succeeding Thomas Pike. Thakral arrived in August. Since then, Fortrea has increased its revenue guidance and its stock price has risen. Thakral has visited offices in various countries, meeting with customers and employees, and setting a strategy for the future. Why did you return to the CRO industry? Early on, I thought about pursuing a career in medicine and fell in love with the business side of healthcare. I then spent the next almost two decades in various roles, consulting business unit operations and in and out of healthcare, and eventually found the CRO industry in 2016. That's where I found my real passion, where I felt that I could have the kind of impact I always wanted to have in life. What attracted you to healthcare? My father's a big influence on me. He immigrated from India to the U.S. as a civil and environmental engineer, so engineering was in the blood. But somewhere in middle school or junior high school, I ended up starting to volunteer at a local hospital in Arcadia, California, where I grew up. In those formative years, I knew I wanted to be in and around medicine. When considering Fortrea, what did you see? When I was looking at opportunities of what to do next after my career at Launch Therapeutics, I wanted to make sure I was going to a stable platform of a company that really works, and then I looked for opportunity where I can actually have impact. When I looked at Fortrea from that lens, what I saw was a company that had gone through a difficult spin period, but at the same time was very well respected by its customers and had a very engaged, strong employee base. Fortrea had about 19,000 employees when it left LabCorp. Is 14,500 a good size? We want to be a global CRO that is able to take on any clinical trial from phase 1 to phase 3 and beyond for any client in the world. There's only a handful of CROs that can claim that. That's who we are. That's what I aspire us to be. I'm not aspiring for us to be the biggest CRO. I'm aspiring us to be the best that we can be in terms of how we service the clients. I like the size of the company where we are. What role do you want Fortrea to fill in a competitive industry? It is to be at a size and scale where we can take on any complex clinical program, first in human phase 1 to post-approval. But we need to remain a nimble organization such that we never lose sight of our customers and our ability to have a level of customer intimacy and customer service that keeps folks coming back. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read as much as we can of the 52 Shades of Success, The Impact of AI series. This one, written by Connie Gentry, the headline, One Founder, Zero Staff, All AI, Robot Founder, Dave Saunders demonstrates a new operational model in which AI agents drive product development and execution. Dave Saunders has always been a team builder. As a partner at a design-focused innovation consultancy in San Francisco, he scaled the business from 30 people to more than 100. When Salesforce acquired the company in 2016, he integrated his team with the Salesforce Ignite team. Then, as the operations chief at VIZR, a partnership between Salesforce and Ford, Saunders led the design research, product management, and marketing teams. He was focused on the intersection of people and technology. He still is, but his latest business venture has been built entirely with a different type of team, one made up of artificial intelligence employees. It's been 100% AI workers, said Saunders, founder and CEO of Chapel Hill-based Robot, and AI-powered tool for automotive technicians. The whole reason for this product is to help mechanics and auto service technicians fix, document, and explain what they did with a customer's vehicle. The target market is new car dealerships and independent repair shops, and the company name is R for repair, O for order, bot. Not to be confused with robot, which might imply automotive repairs being done with robotic assistance. So it's Robot. The same experienced mechanics who've traditionally done automotive diagnostics would continue to work on the cars. And we'll go ahead and stop there. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.